Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
You're listening to the Believe in Giants podcast with Giants legend Carl Banks and broadcaster Bob Papa.
Welcome to another edition of Believe in Giants. Bob Papa, two-time Super Bowl champion Carl Banks. Tell a friend to tell a friend. It's Saints week, Giants and Saints. We'll preview the matchup in a little bit, but Carl, we got a good buddy, a longtime associate of ours, Gary Myers, is joining us here on the show.
Yeah, it's so great to have Gary, and he's done some really good work. He's done some cool books with the likes of Tom Brady, and he's covered the NFL, and he goes deep, deep, deep back into the Dallas Cowboys and annals, if you will. He can tell us so many different things. And Gary, we're so happy to have you, man, because you endeavored to write what has turned out to be a very, very good book, entertaining book, informative book. And really want to know what was the inspiration first and foremost of the book? And congratulations, Once a Giant.
Yeah, thanks, Carl. It's Once a Giant, a story of victory, tragedy, and life after football. And I was looking for a way to tell the story about, you know, what happens to players, what has happened to players from your generation, from the mid-80s to the mid-90s, and the impact of life after football and the challenges that the players have faced, you know, both with mental health issues, financial issues, physical issues. So I instead of like finding players around the NFL and cherry picking them and telling their stories, I didn't think there would be any real continuity to a book like that. It would just be like 12 or 15 individual stories. Mm-hmm. But by telling the story of one team, and particularly this 86 Giants team, which those of us who have lived through all this and covered it or, you know, been fans of it, we know that's the most popular and romanticized of the Giants' four Super Bowl championship teams, besides being the best of the four, in my opinion, by far. I went back and I wanted to talk to all you guys, but I didn't want to tell the story of the season necessarily because that's been done so many times. And I didn't want to have 300 pages of depressing stories because there are some sad stories in this book. So with your help and help of a lot of your teammates, I balanced it off by telling a lot of the stories about the camaraderie and how that brotherhood was formed by growing up together in the NFL, because it was the pre-free agency days. And by the time you guys got to 86, you were confident that was your year. And what really makes this story unique, guys, is that 37 years later, the bond that that team formed is still as strong as ever. And the heartwarming stories in this book, to balance off the heartbreaking stories of the book, how you guys have rallied around each other. If somebody's in need, whether it's financially or needs to get to a doctor or just needs emotional support, that support system that was there in the locker room in 1986 is still here as we come to the end of 2023.
I got a message for our fans out there. Football's back. Bet Online is your number one information source for all your sports wagering info, with up-to-the-minute stats, news, scores, and matchup breakdowns. Get the latest game odds, spreads, and totals from the NFL and college football at your fingertips with Bet Online's real-time updates on stats, news, and odds. From week one all the way to the college football playoffs and Super Bowl, Bet Online is going to give you access to the best football promotions and contests available anywhere online. So head to the website today or use your mobile device. Get in on the action. Remember, use the promo code BELIEVE, B-L-E-A-V, to receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Bet Online, where the game starts.
You know, you talk a lot about the camaraderie and the stories that my teammates share with you, and it is some good stuff in this book. But then, you know, I look around the league and there are, you know, teams like the Pittsburgh Steelers, and you hear stories from former Steelers now about the current team, and they need to get back to playing Steelers football, right? And I think back, I hear those comments, and I think back on the formative years of what Giants football was. And there are two guys that were the pillars of that foundation, and it was Harry Carson and George Martin, right? Because they had been through lean times, right. And we were on the brink of doing something special, but they just kind of reminded us of what it's like to be a bad football team. And as we started to build, those were the guys that were very instrumental in making sure that once the standard was set, that we held ourselves accountable and wanted to continue to get better, not to fall backwards. And I learned, you know, because I came from a Big Ten college, and I know what fans are like, you know, having great fans and people screaming, but I never really got the opportunity to really understand what these wins and losses meant to the Giant fan. And you have an appreciation because the relationship, that was the other thing that I and all of my teammates, we learned from Harry and from George, what it means to have a relationship with your fans at a professional football level. It was different, our relationship. And I think those were formative years for Giant fans as well, you know, because they got a chance to really be part of this team, part of our winning, part of our blue collar mentality. And it was just, it's just super cool. And I'm super grateful that I had, you know, two teammates in particular, George Martin and Harry Carson, because it was different. Like these guys, they told us how we should interact with our fans. They told us why we should appreciate the Giant fan. And, you know, those are just parts of a story that you've written. And I mean, you had so much information, I'm sure, that didn't even get in the book. But I really, for me, really wanted to highlight and to really say thank you to George Martin and Harry Carson for the bond that our team had with our Giants community. And that was, you know, they're champions like we were, that fan base, because it was something special. Our relationship with our fan base was something special. And it wasn't always great, but it was special. We appreciated those guys. And, you know, Bill Parcells, the guy who was also a guy that talked a lot about the fans, and not in a superficial way or not in a dismissive way, but like they were part of what we were building.
Well, you know, Carl, I think what made your 86 team so special to the fans, it had been 30 years since mm-hmm. the Giants had last won a championship. And that era of Giant fans went through a period from 1964 until 1981, when they finally broke a long playoff drought. I mean, just think about that. From 1964 through the 1980 season, the Giants hadn't made the playoffs.
That was my youth, man. That was my youth.
Yeah, me too. Me too. And I was there for the fumble game. You know, I covered that game. Shows how old I am. I was there a couple weeks later when that plane flew overhead against the Cardinals that said 15 years of lousy football, we've had enough. Was in that period of time, that season, when fans had these makeshift toilets out in the parking lot of Giants Stadium when they were burning tickets before a game. So that fan base had been through hell. When things finally got turned around, and I won't even say 81, because then in 82 was a strike year, and that was just a forgettable season for everybody. And then 83, Parcells goes 3-12-1 and almost gets fired. But then 84, you're losing the divisional round to the Niners. The Niners go on and win the championship. In 85, you're losing the divisional round to the Bears. And the Bears go on and win the Super Bowl. And I just remember that the feeling around that team, even though the interesting thing for me, I was still working in Dallas, but I was still really close with a bunch of you guys. Now, I hadn't known you yet, Carl, because when I left in 81, you obviously weren't there yet, but I knew Sims and Taylor and, Carson and George Martin and Jim Burton, all those guys. So I had stayed in touch with them. And I knew the feeling going into that season was you guys really felt it was going to be that year for you. And then you go and lose to Dallas in the opening game, and it goes, oh, not again. It's just going to be unfulfilled expectations. And then I remember Harry or Parcells told me the story that after that game, Parcells gave Harry all the fine money that had been collected in training camp, and he told him, I want you to take the whole team out to dinner, and just make sure you're sticking together. And what was it, like a beefsteak Charlie's on Route 17?
It was called Beefsteak Charlie's. We had a few of those, man. Yeah, that's how it started.
Times have changed. Beefsteak Charlie's,
right?
It's Carbone now.
Yeah, I mean, what was it? It was a Tony Dorsett draw, the game winning score.
No, it was Herschel Walker.
Oh, Herschel Walker with a
And you know
draw.
what? The reason I'm positive about that, it was Herschel Walker's first game with the Cowboys after the USFL break. But
when you mentioned the fumble, I mean, I'm 14 and a half or whatever, and I never would leave the TV screen. But my parents had tickets to Doug Henning, the magic show. And we had just gone over the George Washington Bridge. We're
oh
going
my
down the
God.
West Side Highway, listening to the game on the radio. And I'm like screaming in the back seat of the car that Pizarcik has just fumbled as Jim Gordon is describing this thing. And needless to say, I have disdain for the Doug Henning magic show for the rest of my life, just thinking about driving down the West Side Highway, listening to Pizarcik fumble.
That's funny. I was working for the Associated Press back in 1978, and the whole thing was we would call the New York office and dictate the first five paragraphs of the story. So as soon as the game was over, they would hit the button and the story would go out on the wire. And the whole idea was I was working for the AP. The UPI rider was a couple of seats to my left or whatever, and we wanted to beat them onto the wire so that newspapers would use our story. So I had my whole story dictated. I remember this to Hal Bock, who was a longtime AP guy, and he's got his back to the television in the New York office, and I'm counting down. Okay, we got 40 seconds. I don't remember exactly how many seconds were left, but it was less than a minute. And I'm saying the Giants just going to sit on the ball. I'll count down the seconds to you. And then all of a sudden, Pisarcik spins and tries to hand it off to Zonka, and the ball's on the ground. And I'm yelling at Bach. I said, turn around, watch it, look at the TV. You're not going to believe this. And Herm Edwards, of all people, picks it up and runs it for a touchdown. And within a minute, I had to dictate a new first four paragraphs, and we got that story out pretty quick. But that was my really introduction to deadline journalism, was that fumble changing everything. And and that really, if I remember correctly, the next morning, but Bob helped me with this, Bob Gibson, the offensive coordinator, gets fired. And then after the season, John McVay got fired and Andy Robustelli resigned. And that was the impetus for change. Was that one play really was the impetus for change to George Young eventually getting hired and Perkins and Parcells and that great era of Giants
Interesting.
football in the 80s.
So, I'm
Go ahead,
sorry, go
Carl.
ahead.
No, you go.
No, Gary, the book has so many fun and interesting stories about, I don't want to say lifestyle, but our football lives. Were you shocked at how open some of my teammates were, and some of the things that you found out? And I remember a couple times you called me and say, "Is this true? Did this really happen?"
You were a great fact-checking resource for me because you have a tremendous memory and you filled in so many details where I was. Want to just, I tried to be extremely careful with this because some of it was really sensitive. But Carl, the one thing I've always prided myself on in my journalism career is building trust with the people that I interview, and them knowing if they say to me, "This is off the record," that they don't have to worry about it showing up in print. And if they say, "I'm going to tell you this story, but it's really sensitive, please handle this properly," they know that that's how I was going to do it. And because a lot of people have said, "How did you get Bovaro to tell you this stuff, or Bobby Johnson, or whatever, some really sensitive things?" And I just said, "Well, I had relationships with them, and they trusted me." And there, four players in the book that admitted that they contemplated taking their own lives in their years after football because of things that related to their football career, whether it was, mental health issues or financial issues. And I think the most incredible interview I've ever done in my career was the 3 hours that I spent with Mark Bovaro at his home in Massachusetts. Now, I had known Mark over the years, and we all knew how he was in the locker room. And I think that was intentional, that he just held back. And he's probably a mystery to some of you guys as well. But he had told me going into that interview that he really had suffered from long-term COVID, but I didn't know the degree. And, he contracted it Easter Sunday in 2021, and I was at his house in March of 22. And he was going over how he believes the virus had attacked his brain because his brain was vulnerable as a result of all the concussions that he suffered during his football career. And the virus attacked some people's lungs or other parts of their body, but with Mark, they think that it was his brain. And he went through a period of depression and paranoia, and anxiety that he was saying, his brain was on basically on fire, and he didn't know what to do. And he thought about his former teammates, Dave Duerson, who we played with at Notre Dame, and then you played with Mark with Duerson with the Giants in 1990. And he thought about Andre Waters, who he played with at the end of his career in Philadelphia, and Junior Seau through a mutual friend, Burt Grossman, if we remember him from the Chargers, that Mark became friendly with Junior Seau, and he couldn't come to grips with how were things so bad for those three guys? How were their mental issues so bad that they took their own lives? They each shot it, they shot themselves. And when their brains were donated for CTE research, it turned out they all had it. But Mark still couldn't understand how could these guys reach the depths of despair that they would leave their families and take their own lives. And so he's sitting in the same chair in his living room talking to me that he sat in one night during the worst part of this, his brain being on fire. And he said he basically had a war going on in his head, that the intellectual side of him was saying to him, "Mark, you'll get through this. You have a great family, a great support system. You'll find the right doctor to get you the right meds, that things will calm down." And then his emotional side was saying, "I finally understand what Duerson and Waters and Seau were going through. For how long can you stand on the edge of a cliff without jumping?" And this was real anguish that and conflict that was going on in his head. Now, fortunately, and thank goodness, he never acted on any of those impulses. And eventually, through the help of the Giants and some of the programs that the league and the NFLPA has set up, he finally found the right doctors in Boston after trying for months and got on the right prescriptions, and things eventually got better for him. But I'm just telling you guys, sitting there and listening to that story and thinking, this is Mark Bovaro telling me this, a guy who didn't want to tell you anything. Well, not that he didn't want to tell you, but just didn't. That wasn't the point. He wasn't at the point of his life when he played that he's really a forthcoming guy. That's just who he was. But now, and I'm sure you guys have had interaction with him over the years, he's just a completely different person. And to listen to him tell me this story, on the one hand, my heart was breaking. On the other hand, I'm thinking, this is going to be an unbelievable story to tell in the book because his teammates, like you said, Carl, the stuff in this book that you guys don't know. And I was just really appreciative of so many of these players just opening up to me about the most sensitive topics that have taken place in their lives. And, and as a result, I think I put together a book that is good. This is time just going to make you laugh because some of the stories that you've told me, and really people have told me that they've got tears in their eyes reading about what's happened to some of these players that they've revered over the years.
So, Gary, where can fans find the book? Holidays are coming.
Yeah.
Once a Giant, Always a Giant, a story of victory, tragedy, and life after football.
Yeah, well, it's actually Once a Giant, not Always a Giant.
Yeah,
I can
Once a Giant.
shorten that one. It's a great holiday gift, and I'm thankful the Wall Street Journal picked it as one of three sports books in its recommendation for the holidays. But you can get it at Amazon, Barnes and Noble, any of the online sites. If you still like to go to bookstores, there's plenty of Barnes and Noble around, and there's still plenty of time before the holidays. And I appreciate you guys having me on to let me talk about it.
Gary, we appreciate you coming on as well. Happy holidays to you and your family. I know you and Carl have a thing at the Union League coming up next week. That should be a lot of fun for those that are going to be in attendance there. But best of luck with the book, and thanks for a few minutes.
Thank you so much, guys, and happy holidays. And I'll see you next week,
Thanks,
Carl.
Gary.
Take care.
You got it.
Carl, just a fascinating trip. It's an incredible book. I mean, just reading the whole thing has been absolutely spellbinding. And the fact that, like, a lot of you guys don't know some of the stories that are in the book is pretty cool. That's what makes it
Yeah,
unique.
it does, Bob. And, I think probably for a lot of guys, that trip down memory lane was therapeutic, and it also highlighted the importance of teamwork and bonding as friends, and I think that your guys have an opportunity to share these stories with Gary, and teammates hearing about those stories are laughing when we see each other now. It's like, wow, this is really cool. And the situation with Mark, man, I considered one of my he was considered I consider him one of my best friends, and we never talked, right? We worked
Right.
together, we talked, we said little things, but we always kept in touch. Even when we retired, it would be, hey Mark, hey Carl. I would text his Boston accent and through a text message, hey Mark, Mark, and we'd have a chuckle, but it's just fun. But he was like, I wasn't his closest friend, but he was one of my best friends as a teammate, because we shared, obviously our abusive 9-on-7 practices and one-on-one drills, but we worked to get each other better, and it was just fun. And we'd mock the coaches quietly as we're walking off the field in practice about how crazy they were. And we're like two showpieces for them in practice, but it was all good. We had so much fun.
All right, so I'm looking at this, the Saints. They are second in the NFL in completion percentage against. Quarterbacks are only hitting 57%. They're seventh in passing yards allowed, 189 a game. They're second in touchdown to interception ratio, 16 touchdowns against, 14 picks. And they're first in the NFL in quarterback passer rating against, 74.7. So how do the Giants go down to New Orleans and win this game?
The Giants play to their profile. That's what they do. Those numbers are probably in line with the Giants' averages right now. So if they can play to that profile, be efficient in terms of not putting the ball in harm's way, and this is going to be a game where the defense has to make plays, because it's going to be tough for this offense down there. The one thing you can't do defensively, Bob, is let Alvin Kamara ruin the game with a 35-yarder or 40-yard run for touchdown or catch for touchdown. You have to contain him. You're not going to stop him, but you have to contain Kamara, because he's the guy that keeps their offense on schedule. He's their go-to guy, and they got to tackle. It's simple as that. He's not an easy guy to tackle. Taysom Hill, if he plays, he's not an easy guy to tackle. They got to get guys on the ground, no yards after carry, because this defense will have to be more and play a bigger role in this victory if they are to get one.
Yeah, I mean, and look, I know everybody talks about going down and playing New Orleans. You know, the Giants beat the Saints the last time they played them down there. That was Barkley's touchdown run in overtime. In the previous five games, the Giants had been outscored 221 to 129. But that was Drew Brees and Sean Payton. Those numbers are gone. That's all gone now. And in fact, the Saints this season are averaging less points per game at home than they do on the road. Derek Carr is, I mean, his passing numbers, I think he's gone, I got to look at the stat here. He's gone four games this season in which he's had 130 or fewer passing yards. So it's not like the old Saints of the track meet. This is going to really be about defense and grinding it out in this game. And then Tommy DeVito doing what he's been doing and not turn the football over.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And when you look at the division that the Saints play in, they're in a grinded-out division. It's not pretty football that they play in that division. So they are not dissimilar to the Giants, where they've got to take advantage of every opportunity. And if you're a Giant defender, just understand what's important in a game like this, and it is tackling. You play to your strengths, but you cannot be exploited. Now, the Giants still, defensively, they still give up some plays. In a game like this, you cannot afford to give up chunk plays, because it could be the difference in a game on the road in New Orleans.
What else about this game is, as we kind of look at it, that jumps out at you?
The Saints defense. They are still a good defense. Their defense is the one that kind of carries the day for them, too. I mean, they can get after the passer. They can give you some exotic looks defensively. You've got to be able offensively. Your offensive line has to be great communicators, and that means the offensive line that extends out to the wide receivers. Everybody has got to be on the same page. Or else they're gonna see their quarterback under duress a lot.
Yeah, Paulson Adebo has four interceptions. He's got 14 passes defended, and then you got like the old hands, right? Cam Jordan has been doing it at a high level for a long time, and I know you love linebacker play, and you think about DeMario Davis's career in the NFL, yeah. And he's just one of those unicorns where, like, deep into his career, kind of like London Fletcher did it. They play at like a really high level over a long period of time. And DeMario Davis is as good now as he ever was.
Yeah, he knows the game. He plays the game from the head down. I mean, he's just a smart guy, great anticipation. He's doing, I'm guaranteeing you, he's studying every one of these offensive linemen. He's conveying that to his guys, both he and Cam Jordan, both. Are just, you know, very cerebral and mental type players, as well as good physically. But Davis is as good as they come at his age, man. He just knows how to play the game, and he will cause some problems for you too. You got to get him blocked.
How about this DeVito factor? He's the first undrafted rookie quarterback to lead two game-winning drives back-to-back in the common draft era. But think about that. Think about the undrafted quarterbacks that have played in this league. He's got three wins. It's interesting, too, because there's a lot of people that, you know, criticize and they look at this. He's 3-1 as a starting quarterback in the league. I don't know how long it's going to go. It might continue to go. But all I know is he's winning games, and there's a lot of backup quarterbacks that wish they had won three games in a row over the course of their careers.
Yeah, this is a testament to Tommy DeVito's preparation, his maturity as a young player. But there was always something about him, and I'm not putting him anywhere but where he is right now, right? So I'm not projecting for this young man, but he has earned the success that he is having right now. Clearly, you know, come from behind victories, there have to be other players on the other end of something that the quarterback is doing. But Tommy DeVito is doing his part, right? He's making good passes. He's making good decisions, when to run, when not to run. He's not taking sacks, but he's throwing footballs to people that are catching them. And that's important. He's placing the ball where his teammates can catch them. And that's why he's having this success. Backup quarterbacks normally, in certain situations, you wait for the shoe to fall. You say it's about to happen. You know, that's why he's a backup. But this kid is playing like a starter. His teammates, in particular, Saquon Barkley has been a huge help for this guy. The run game, this offensive line, who has gotten better by the week. And, you know, I went back 4 weeks, four weeks, to talk about how I was starting to see signs. And each week they've gotten better and better and better. And so everything is coming together for the young quarterback. And, you know, he's doing his part. You know, if it ain't broke, don't break it. And he's not breaking it.
Did you see what the Giants put out on their YouTube channel where they have the game-winning field goal? And yes. Then they have us in the booth.
Yes.
How about my son, Christopher? My son, Christopher, who's back from his deployment, his first deployment. He was in Estonia for a long time and Poland for a little bit. I mean, he looks like he's 12 the way he's running around hugging everybody in the booth.
Listen, man, that was one of the more exciting victories that we've witnessed outside of Super Bowls. And we've had some big moments in that booth, but that one was something. And I think, like I said, I think it was a program win, because, you know, as you call the game, you often cite stats, and some of them are not good, like the Giants' record on Monday Night Football. And then, you know, you start to talk about those things and you're looking at a team that is where they are record-wise. And here they are on this drive. And you're just recalling what Bob said, they're awful on Monday nights, right? If you're a fan. And that sits there. And all of a sudden, you're saying, oh, shoot, they just gave up a touchdown. They had this victory. Oh, crap, Barkley could have ended the game, but he fumbled. And you're just waiting for the shoe to drop. And then all of a sudden, they get it going, and there's that field goal. And that is just kind of, it just opened up a lot of great feelings, because they shook off so many things that should not have happened, given the facts that were present in their record on Monday night and all the things that could go wrong actually did go wrong, except for, you know, you have one drive where you're rolling, and then the next drive you're saying, okay, just end the game, and Barkley breaks out one, and then all of a sudden the defense couldn't hold the rope. And it was like, okay, this is our season in a nutshell. I'm sure that's a lot of the sentiments in that stadium. And I know Christopher, who's a huge Giant fan, understands that. He knows those feelings. And that kick, man, it was just, you know, it uncorked a lot of happiness.
All right, you got anything else?
No, man. I think Giants defense is going to have to play a major role in this. This offensive line will too, but I think this defense, and when I say play a major role, it's just doing the blocking, the tackling, and the blocking for this offensive line. But they've got to be good tacklers, because, you know, the chunk plays could make a difference in a game like this.
Coach Dable got his jacket. The Giants got a win.
Tommy D got his jacket. Wondell got his jacket.
That thing sold out fast.
Yeah, it did.
All right. Carl, how do we like to end it?
Tell a friend to tell a friend.
Believe in Giants.
Thank you for listening to Believe. You can show support to your host by subscribing to the show and giving us a 5-star rating on your preferred platform. Check us out at Believe.com and search for BLEAV on YouTube.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.